You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE has closed its doors for the first day of a new trading week, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And tonight I'm talking to Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss in Johannesburg. A busy start to a busy week, Gary. I mean, I looked at the Stock Exchange News Service this morning. The first thing that came out was Astral Foods. I don't know if you cover that one, but if you'd like to comment, that's fine. After that, I think the one that really caught my eye was the Vodacom Group interim results for the 6 months ended 30th of September. And the share price obviously reacted last week to those really, really quite positive acquisitions, notably in Egypt. The share price down just over 1% today from what I can see. What do you make of Vodacom?
Thanks, Lindsay. Thanks for having me on the show. Looking at Vodacom, you know, it's certainly good to see in their data, at least in their customer numbers, I mean, moving up 6.2 million. So a lot bigger business than it was in the past with 130 million subscribers totally. If you compare to MTN, still much smaller. But I think, as you said, it's that acquisition strategy that's helping them to add, you know, consumers in different geographic regions. You know, looking at the voice and the data, both of them under pressure just because voice and data are getting cheaper. You can't make the same amount of money off voice and data that, as you could in the past, and that's why group revenue was only up what was about 4.2%. But as you mentioned, it's the acquisitions that are one bringing new customers, but also that are allowing them to push into, to I suppose, different markets as well. So as you mentioned, that Egyptian transaction, the goal really to try and target 80 million unbanked Egyptians with financial services products. So these telcos, I think, are switching from that traditional telco model to almost anything else. And I mean, we've seen it in the M-Pesa numbers today as well. It does seem to be fairly lucrative, but it's a business that is becoming a utility. And I think that's what the market picked up on these results as well. So while Vodacom was down 1.28% at the close, MTN was also down almost to 2% at one point. It did manage to firm up into the latter half of the session, but also finished down 0.23%.
Yeah, I think it went from a growth story, obviously, because it was a novelty, the fact that we have cellular mobile telephony, and then it became saturated. So then it became not so much a value stock, but as you say, a utility. But now with fintech, surely it goes growth again, doesn't it?
Now, I think it could go growth again, but I think the risk is just around the execution. So these are typically, fantastic businesses, but as you say, they're very good mobile phone businesses, and they used to have towers, and they could administer that infrastructure, and they could, market themselves very well, and they understood how to deal with different regulators. But as a business pivots into a totally new industry, it comes with new regulations. It comes with a very different set of challenges, and I think there's a high execution risk. Now, for Vodacom specifically, it's not just a high execution risk in terms of you're not going to try and sell different products to your client base. It also comes with you're doing it in different geographies as well. And we can see the difficulty MTN had operating in some of the more exotic locations, like Nigeria and Iran, for example. But I'm not saying Egypt is in the same category, but any geographic change comes with its own execution risk as well. So I think, yes, maybe they can get to a more growth story, but they're adding a lot of risk to what was a very stable, very dividend-friendly company that was, as you say, it was seen as a utility. The dividend was R4.20 today, and people buy Vodacom because it's pretty stable, and it pays a decent dividend because it's a business that's gone ex growth. To suddenly shift that business now, you're talking about a different capital market that's going to be interested in it, and like I said, it comes with a whole different risk profile as well. So I think they do just need to be careful with this kind of rollout.
Okay, let's move on to something else now. And the retail stocks have been so noisy in the last 3 to 4 months as we come out of lockdown, as we come out of pandemic, and more, not come out of it, but certainly get used to it. And people have suddenly become more confident when it comes to putting their hands in their pockets. And Shoprite Holdings Limited came out with an operational update for the quarter ended September of this year. And the share price up on my delayed screen, around about 6.5%. Really good performance.
No, exceptional performance. So finished the day up 6.92%, so almost 7%. That was pretty much near the highs of the day, I think.
Yes.
Just pull up a chart. Yep, yeah, on the highs of the day, finishing at 197.80. So it's it was a great update. I mean, it was a voluntary update as well. So this was ShopRite speaking its own book and just doing a little bit of a rah-rah. But group sales up 9.3%, so almost double-digit sales growth, which I think in the South African environment is incredibly difficult. And it just shows that it's managing to, you know, to take market share from both Pick and Pay and Woolies. You know, it did obviously have a lot to say about the damage that they experienced as part of the civil unrest. You know, they were talking about a book value damage of 1.25 billion, but Sasria has already paid 500 million in an initial insurance payout. But also, I suppose, you know, the other thing that I picked up, around that, I mean, sure, you saw that a lot of supermarkets closed and they're talking about, you know, 47 stores, you know, haven't opened yet and a lot of them might relocate or not even open at all. But the really incredible aspect of, I think, the operational update today was what's happening with 6060, which is the, online delivery app, and it really has become the premier app in South Africa for online grocery delivery, and a long way ahead of Pick and Pay's ASAP and Woolies Dash. So I think just the technological improvements that they've made around being a grocer, pretty exciting. I think the market recognizing that and marking up the stock.
Yes, Astral Foods came out with their numbers. We don't need to talk about that one, which is a shame because, I mean, chicken is still the favoured protein for the majority of the South African population and also very much linked to companies like ShopRite. But we'll move straight to Distill. It says here to 8:35 this morning, offer to acquire the entire issued ordinary and B-share capital of Distill and further cautionary announcement. Heineken is buying it. Which is a sad thing because it means Distell gets delisted and another company bites the dust from the JSE Securities Exchange. But on the other hand, a really, really good story because money comes into the country and it means that South African companies are ripe for the picking for overseas raiders, which means that we're doing things right.
Yeah, well, I think it's always a good thing to have quality businesses. It depends who you want owning them. But I suppose in a free market, it's wonderful that we're getting the foreign direct investments because I think Distell will benefit from Heineken's client base internationally. I mean, remember, this is, the number one largest cider producer joining with the world's second largest cider producer. So, new markets open up to their products. I mean, Distell has a huge variety of other products as well. and some really powerful brands, things like Klipdrift, JC LaRue, all of that is going to be able to, you know, almost be exported through Heineken's distribution network. But of course, the market was very disappointed because they also put a value on Distell for the first time. So saying that they're going to buy them at 180 rand per share. And remember, this was actually leaked in May. This wasn't supposed to come out to the market that there was an offer in the works. And Distell obviously had to come to market almost immediately and say, listen, yes, we have received interest from Heineken and everyone got very excited about the stock. Marked it all the way up almost to 200 rand a share at one point. And now the offer comes out at 180. Suddenly, obviously, we had to have a big re-rating in the stock price today. So we saw the stock finishing down 6.9% as you started to price in the mechanics of the deal. And remember, if this is going through at 180, there's still, of course, the risk that competition authorities block it. There's all the risks that come with a deal like this. At the same time, these deals don't happen overnight. While we have the announcement this morning, it's not a done deal yet. So you've got some carry cost as an investor. If you're going to go and buy Distell shares now and you're going to take 180 rand a share when you sell them essentially to Heineken, you've got to factor in your interest cost over the period. So with the stock trading above 180, yesterday afternoon, I think closed, where did it close? Closed at 182.50, I think. Yeah, closed at 182.59 last night. Of course, that has to re-rate today when you're only going to get 180 rand a share. So Distell down heavily, almost 7% down.
Okay, so what does that mean? It's not a done deal. That's what I'm getting from you now. It's not a done deal for various reasons. And what about shareholders like Remgro, for example? Could they say, well, 180, okay, when we first started talking to Heineken before it was leaked to the press, and leaked to various other avenues, it was probably was a good deal. But now, suddenly, it's not such a good deal. Could it be scuppered by the price? And the second thing is, could someone else come in and say, well, if Heineken wants Distill, maybe we should have a look at it as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, it is a fairly sizable deal. So if you remember, you know, back when AB InBev bought out SAB, I mean, that went through at $122 billion. This one's going to go through, I think, at about $40 billion. So it's still a huge deal. But yeah, absolutely. You know, we've seen that with the likes of Adapt IT and other companies that you know, once you put a price on something, then other people go, hey, wait a minute, that's actually affordable, even though it is pretty expensive. It might be affordable, so you could get a second buyer coming out. And I think you're going to see a little bit of volatility around the share price just because of that. You're not just pricing in the carry cost; you're also pricing in the idea one, that the deal could fall apart, but two, that they could get a better price as well. Also, just remember inside, I'm just pulling up the ownership report now as well. If you look at the ownership summary of this of Distell Group, I think the major shareholder with about 30% is the PIC. So I remember that they have expressed, you know, an interest, and I think they are going to be quite excited about the deal. You know, 31.78% is held by the Public Investment Corporation, which is kind of mirrors, you know, the Remgro Capefin investment holding. But yeah, absolutely. If they don't get support from of those two, you're going to have a problem on the deal. But every indication says that you're not going to have an issue around shareholder support. And, you know, while it was a little bit lower than the market perhaps was expecting, if you go back to that undisturbed price in May, it's still significantly higher and will probably be a very good value unlock for Remgro.
Okay, let's have a look at some spot prices now, and I'll start with the currencies, because the dollar rand is 15.25, the British pound against the rand is 20.49, the euro rand is 17.44, and the euro dollar is 1.1435, which is a slightly stronger US dollar. British pound against the US dollar, the cable is 1.3435, which is a rise of 0.5% for the pound against the mighty greenback. The gold price, 1862, which is an elevated price, but still in the last 24 hours, down $5 an ounce. The platinum price is up $8 an ounce, closing in on 1100, 1096. Palladium is up, goodness me, look at this thing. It's flying, $55 an ounce higher since Friday at 2146. Let's have a look at other commodities now, notably the oil price, which is going in the opposite direction to palladium, because West Texas crude is now mired below $80 a barrel, $79.64, which is a 1.4% move to the downside. Also down 1.4% is Brent crude at exactly $81 per barrel. Bitcoin, 64,600 and change, which is only up 0.5% now, so coming off its highs. The US 10-year Treasury yield, yeah, it's edging higher. The yield is now above 160 by a fraction, 1.60, let's call it, for the US 10-year. And the South African 10-year bond yield, after the budget of last week, the medium-term budget anyway, 9.435%, which is up about 3.5%. Basis points. And the S&P at the moment, I only look at the futures, very little going on, up 0.15%. What do you make of the US markets at the moment after last week's inflation data, Gary?
Oh, it's a good question. So US, if you look at the earnings season that we've just gone through, there's been some pretty spectacular results. And if you compare you know, the US earnings season to the earnings that we've been getting out of the rest of the world, you can see either analysts are too pessimistic or the US companies are just absolutely incredible, because we got a lot more beats out of the US companies than we did the rest of the world companies. So US market's still looking very, very strong. And weirdly, even though it trades at a much higher multiple, it still looks like it's got some way to go. I mean, we still are fairly exposed to the US, but I do think that you've got to be a little bit more cautious around those very highly priced tech stocks. You know, with that inflation number, as you mentioned, coming in last week, just so high, and the idea that we're going to have a lot more persistent inflation in the system, you need to start considering that the market might move away from the traditional growth stocks that are promising to make money in future, and instead start focusing on the value stocks that are making cash right now. So our slant is kind of, you know, we're reading the U.S. market is look at more of the value segments, look at the banking sector, look at, you know, we really like the auto manufacturers, not the Teslas, so the GMs, the Fords, just because these are very established businesses that are absolutely excellent and very, very reasonably priced in earnings terms. So I think you've got to be selective in the U.S. markets, but it still looks like a powerful geography and a place that I think most clients should have some exposure.
Yeah, you can't ignore the U.S. market. I mean, look back 12, 13 years where it was and where it is now and where it continues to go. Can you believe the S&P around about 4,700? I can't quite believe it. Anyway, let's go back to reality and to the JSE Securities Exchange, where on my delayed screen, which I think is probably taken in the closing auction, I've got ShopRite up 6.9%, Richemont up nearly 2.9%, Northam, I think it's because of that palladium price surge, 2.4%. Higher. The ABSA group, 2.3% higher. So the banks weighing in with a little bit of a gain there. Impala Platinum up 2.25%. On the downside, as you referenced earlier on, Distell, not liking that deal, but simply because it's, I think it's at a 1.2% discount to the close on Friday. But anyway, 6.9% weaker at 170. Sogo Sun down 6%. Textana down 4.6%. RCL Foods down 3% and Sappi down 2.5%. Any other stocks outside of those that have caught your eye today, please, Gary?
Yeah, not really. Just I think if you look at the iron ore market at the moment, it's really struggling. So we had Kumba also down. I don't know if you mentioned it. It was a very long list of stocks that you gave. Yeah. But Kumba down 2.18% and just suffering, you know, all sorts of I suppose distortions in the Chinese markets. You know, really hammering iron ore in Singapore. You know, we've got news reports that coal inventories are rising, and yet we've got steel manufacturing, coal inventories and iron ore inventories are rising, but actual steel manufacturing is in the doldrums. Part of it because of the property problems that they've had. Also, the kind of coal price being, hit by what's happening at COP26, but also the fact that they've put all sorts of emission standards into the factories in China as well. So, the way that I'm reading it is just, the system, not allowing those that volume to really get through it, and big distortions there, and that causing all sorts of havoc for iron ore players like Kumba.
Gary, give us the closing indices that you watch, please, on the
And that's 1.8%.
Sorry, I lost you for the last 30 seconds. Could you start that? I don't know if you can remember what you were saying, but you suddenly disconnected for about 15 seconds. Can you remember what you were saying?
Sure. What was the last question?
You've got me now.
any other stocks that caught my eye?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, any other stocks that caught your eye? So just go from there. Thank you.
There was a lot you mentioned there, but Kumba down 2.18%. So we're seeing all sorts of distortions, I think, coming through from the Chinese markets lately. So if you look at the iron ore inventories as well as the coal inventories overseas, you're just seeing one steel production tumbling, but you're seeing big bulls in inventories in both iron ore and steel. And a lot of this has got to do with, just regulatory changes that are coming through. Some of it is coming from COP26 and the pressure that'll put on coal markets in general, but also just Chinese steel production down, one because obviously they're having a little bit of a problem in their property market, but also the fact that they've got much stricter emission standards being pushed through as well. So that just playing havoc with iron ore prices in Singapore, and that feeding through into the likes of Kumba Iron Ore on our local market.
Gary, give us the closing JSE indices, the ones that you watch, and also the top 40 and also the overall index, plus, of course, the all-important volume or value traded, rather. Off you go.
Looking at the All Share Index, we closed at 69,994, so 6 points short of that 70,000. We were through it a little bit earlier in the day, but that just pulled it back a little bit. Resource Index, as we can see from the likes of Kumba, Exxaro, Glencore, all down on the day, BHP, Anglo, all moving lower. Resource 10 is off 1.19% at 63,926. The industrial is doing fairly well, up 0.4%. point, at least 1.05% to 93.928. Financial index also having a solid day, up 0.85%, with the financial 15 at 1.4078. So those are just the main indices that I watch. Value traded, I'm not going to be able to give you. I've got a blank on my Reuters screen.
But I think we can, Gary, I think we can safely predict that it's below 20 billion again, which it has been for I think 2-3 weeks now.
No, it is definitely. We're seeing much, much lighter volumes traded. Yeah, I wish I could give you the number, but...
No, there's no problem at all. But thanks very much for your analysis, Gary. Gary Boyson is from Rand Swiss in Johannesburg, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.